Okay, again, this year will be for Rav Moshe Lema, for David Avram Ben Miriam. So after our long introduction, now we're finally ready to talk about months. We're ready to do it. So this week will be Rav Moshe Kislev, Meretz Hashem. We benched it last Shabbos. It'll be this Thursday. So I'm going to start discussing Kislev. The Mar Cheshvan just about over, so we'll be talking about it now. It's going to be too late to really take advantage of it. But we'll talk about Kislev. Kislev, we know, is famous for Hanukkah. That's kind of like the hallmark of Chodesh Kislev. But yet, I want to understand the theme of the month overall, and then we'll see very clearly how Hanukkah fits right into Kislev. It kind of is a perfect match for the month. So let's just start slowly. We'll try to go through points about Kislev one by one. Part of the challenge of this year is that there's so many points to discuss. I have to organize it in a way that makes sense. So I'm going to try to go through it step by step. Hopefully, we'll all fit in. So number one, so Kislev, in terms of the natural cycle of the year, is really the darkest part of the year. You look outside, it gets dark now around 5 o'clock or so this time of year. Shabbos is over very early. I think the earliest Shabbos of the year is coming up this week or next week. The next few weeks we're at the early Shabbos of the year. On the calendar, you have the longest nights, the shortest days, and Kislev always approaches the winter solstice. It always occurs either in Kislev or Teves, one of the two. But Kislev is always the month where the days are getting shorter. Nights get longer. And then either at the very end of Kislev or beginning of Teves, you hit the solstice and things start flipping around again. So that's how Kislev works. So what that means for us, as we spoke about last week, we live in sync with the seasons. And if the month is a month where things are getting darker and darker, days are getting shorter and shorter, so that means that also, in a spiritual sense, we have some impact on our own Avodas Hashem from that natural phenomena that the days are getting shorter. So we live in sync with the seasons, and our spiritual mood is very much impacted by the seasons around us, like we spoke about before. So the question is, the dark outside represents something. What does it represent to us? How is the dark outside, for us, a spiritual darkness? What is it in our lives which is impacted by that dark, which we have to fight off during Kislev? I just want to share with you an interesting quote from the Gemara. There it is. This is a Gemara Masechas Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah discusses Avodah Zarah, obviously. One of the Mishnayos in Avodah Zarah talks about the ancient idolatrous holidays the Goyim had. On those days, we had restrictions how to interact with the Goyim. And we weren't supposed to give them too many benefits on their holidays because they'd go and they would thank their idols for what happened. So the Mishnah lists all the ancient, these are Roman idolatrous holidays. And one of the holidays listed there is the holiday called Kalenda, which sounds very much like calendar. Right? Calendar. And the Gemara explains what exactly is this holiday of Kalenda. So it quotes that this is the Fisher Ra Adam Rishon. It says it begins with Adam Rishon. Adam Rishon, living in the first year of history, so he saw that the day was getting shorter and shorter and shorter. He was created on Rosh Hashanah, Tishrei. And he's looking at the world, and just every single day it gets darker and darker, the nights are getting longer, the days are getting shorter. And the Gemara says that Adam Rishon was very concerned. He said, Oili, Shema Bishvil Shesarachti Olam Chashuch Badi. Maybe because I sinned, the world is getting darker for me. This is like a punishment. Hashem is making the world darker and darker and darker because of my sins. V'chozo Tovohu, and he's concerned that the world's going to a point that's going to go back to what it was before Bereishis. Tovohu, just emptiness, nothingness. Vizuhi Misa Shusalim. This is the Misa Hashem said I'm supposed to get. Hashem said you're going to die. So maybe the method of death will be the world's going to slowly revert back to nothingness again. And Adam got very concerned. So what happened? Amar v'yoshav ches yom b'tayna. So Adam decided I'm going to fast and do tshuva. He said, battery's out. But I have mine recorded. So he spent 8 days fasting and davening and doing tshuva. Kemon sherah tkufas teves, v'rah yom shemarech. Then Adam saw tkufas teves come. He saw the solstice. And he saw the days starting to become longer. So then he realized this is a natural event. And then he's made it an 8-day yontif, a celebration. So when Adam made it, he made it for Hashem. He said, Hashem, thank you for extending my days, making the days longer and the nights shorter. But the Goyim eventually turned it into an Avodah Zarah idolatrous holiday. That's what the Gemara says. And that's called calendar, I guess, for a reason, because it's, marking calendar events. It always ends up around the solar new year, in that time of the year. And it happens to be, you know, different commentators point out that the non-Jewish world, the Christian world, does celebrate an eight-day type festival. December 25th to New Year's is 8 days. And this kind of matches up. You know, historically, you know, their holidays do trace back to idolatrous holidays. That's very clear historically. So it could be this Gemara as a source for where that holiday originally stemmed from, which we have nowadays. But what I want to illustrate from this Gemara is that Adam noticed this event, the fact that days were getting shorter, nights were getting longer, and he got very nervous about it. And he thought it was because of his sins, he thought it was because of, you know, his problems. And then once he saw days getting longer, he made a holiday out of it. He said, "Thank you, Hashem, thank you for making the days longer and the nights shorter." And Adam was able to sense in the seasons some spiritual changes occurring, which he felt were negative and then felt were positive. So that's what the Gemara tells us. So this is a time of darkness. We're in the time right now of the greatest darkness of the year. So the question is, when we talk about darkness on a spiritual, what does it represent spiritually? We know what it means physically, but spiritually, what is this darkness to us? So let's just start off understanding the metaphors of dark and light. We find it throughout the writings of Chazal, throughout the Gemara. The darkness represents, number one, confusion, things being unclear, things being kind of, it's covered. We don't know what's happening. The Gemara tells us that Olam Hazeh is compared to Laila. So the world we're in is a world of Laila, of darkness. And the reason for that is because this world, things are not so clear. Hashem is not always clear. Why events occur is not so clear. Our purpose in life isn't always so clear to us. What we're supposed to do in situations is not always so clear. Things are confusing sometimes. This is a world of darkness. On the other hand, Olam Haba is a world of light compared to the daytime. Olam Haba is a world of clarity. In Olam Haba, there's no questions. Everything's 100% clear. We understand about Hashem. We understand why events happen. We understand our role in life. We understand what we're doing in this world. Olam Haba is a time where we can see everything in clarity. The sun is shining on us, as it were. But in Olam Hazeh, this is a world, even during the daytime, is a world of darkness because it's a world of confusion. That's the world that we're in. We know darkness causes us to make mistakes, even, you know, physically. And in one piece, only one handout today, but the one hand that I have today, this one over here, let's pass this around. It's a piece from Mesilas Yesharim. And he talks about the metaphor of darkness. Hope it's not too small for some, but it's a... The copier and I had a fight, and the copier won again. So, it happens sometimes. It also flips over the wrong way backwards, but it should be good enough. But there's the English on top, Hebrew on the bottom. The Mesilas Yesharim, in the very beginning of the Sefer, he, in his discussion of the idea of Zahirus, of being careful, being cautious in life, so he talks about this mushel of darkness. So I bracket it off. It's on page 72, which is on the bottom of one of the sides, page 72, and I put a bracket around it. And he says, Humash Amru Zichron Levracha, this is what Chazal teach us, Toshes Choshech Vi Laila. It says in the Pasuk in Tehillim, we say this in Rosh Chodesh and Baruch Nafshi, that the darkness comes and it's nighttime. And the Gemara tells us, Zeh Olam Hazeh Shedom Laila. This refers to Olam Hazeh, which is compared to nighttime. So Mesilas Yesharim explains to us the following. Vavein kama niflo ha-maimar miti hazeh. He says, understand how incredible this statement is. L'misha maimik l'havimbo. If you undertake the time to understand it in its depth. The Chazal speak in short statements sometimes, but it's like a code. If you crack the code, you see like a ton of wisdom coming out of it. So if you take your time to think about this statement, this world's a world of darkness, you understand what it means. And he explains, Kine choshech ha-layla shnei minei ta'uyos efshar lo shigrom l'ina adam. The darkness of night can cause us two different problems. Now, we're so used to street lights, and, you know, we're not used to being in, like, total darkness. We can imagine back in, you know, go back 200 years, 150 years ago, nighttime was really dark, and there was no lights around. And especially when it wasn't a full moon, if it was a new moon, you couldn't see a thing. It was pitch black. A few candles here and there would be all you had. So when you're in the total darkness, imagine the mistakes one can make. So there's two different types of mistakes one can make in darkness. Number one, Oyechasis ayin achal yira mashlifon of klal. So one mistake we make is that our eyes are covered and we can't see what's in front of us. So we just don't know what's there. When you walk around in the dark, you're scared you're going to trip, you're going to knock into something because you just can't see anything. Oh, the other possibility is shiato sa'at shiira lo amud ki'ilu hu adam. You might make a mistake and mistake things for what they're not, but they are not. You might look at a pillar and think it's a human being. The adam may look at a human being ki'ilu hu amud, think it's a pillar. I mean, sometimes it's just so dark, things are fuzzy. It's like you kind of make out an object in front of you, you're not really sure what it is, then you get closer, it wasn't what you were thinking it was. So sometimes we don't see anything in front of us at all. We're worried we're going to fall into a hole. Sometimes we think we see a hole, and it's really a log. Sometimes we think we see a person, and it's a tree stump. You know, it's just so dark we can't tell. Kain l'chumrius v'gashmius olam hazeh. So the mashal is olam hazeh. The chumrius and gashmius, the physicality and the materialism olam hazeh, they cause darkness to us. Hinehu choshech alaylo ein haseichel. This is the darkness of night to our minds. Being physically, it's light outside. We can see. There's light in the room. We can see. But our minds are darkened based on the physicality of this world. V'gorom lo shtei t'uyos. So being in this world, olam hazeh, causes us two different mistakes we can make. Eino meniach lo shiira ha-michsholos shebedarchi olam. So one possibility is that we don't see the obstacles in front of us. We don't realize what the physical world can do to cause us to trip and fall. We just don't see it. We're living our lives, and suddenly this big obstacle is on our way, and we fall spiritually. And we're never expecting it because we didn't see it in front of us. So people walk in confidence. People will walk in confidence, and then they will fall and be destroyed without ever even realizing there's a problem in front of them. Some people look back after doing something terrible and say, "How did I just do that? I didn't even see it coming." Somebody will do something, this is, you know, ruin a relationship. They said something stupid. And they'll say, I never even dreamed of saying that. It just came out, and look at this. Now I'm in this big fight. And, you know, these things happen to us sometimes, and we don't even realize it was coming. Not like we planned for it. We didn't even know it was there. We just made the mistake. You know, this world just causes us sometimes just not to see the truth in front of us. This is what Shlomo Melech says in Mishlei. Derech Rishayim ka'afela lo yadu. The way of the Rishayim is darkness. They do not know, but make a shilu what they're going to trip on. You just don't know what you're tripping on. You just trip and didn't realize why you tripped. Vamar arum ra v'nistar v'nistar upsayim avru v'nenashu. It says the wise person can see the evil and hide from it, but the fool is over. He does a verus and he gets punished. He doesn't see the evil. Vomer, it says chacham yera v'sar meira. A wise person sees and veers away from the darkness, uksil mis'aber v'teach. But the fool will become full of himself and be confident. Kilim bari lehem ka'ulam, because somebody who's foolish and doesn't understand this world has pitfalls that we don't notice, their hearts are as wide and healthy as a wedding hall, is what it says. I mean, they're so confident in who they are, they don't even realize anything wrong in front of them. V'noflim terem sh'yedu mi'michshol klal, and they'll fall before they even realize there's a michshol there, there's an obstacle there. So olam hazeh has the ability that we just don't realize what we're about to get ourselves into. It's not that we made a mistake. We just didn't know it was coming, and then suddenly, you know, it happens. And like, oh no, how'd that happen? So that's one possibility, one mistake we can make. Betos Hashni, on the second mistake, who kasha min rishon, is even worse than the first mistake. That's when we mistake what something for what it's not. Hushamateri osa mashrom mamish harak ilhu tov, vetov kilhu ra. We think that good is bad and bad is good. Some will say, "Why are you doing this?" And I'll say, "Because it's the right thing to do. This is what I need to do." The person will say, "You're making a big mistake." I'll say, "No, I'm not. This is what I have to do." And then we do it and realize it was a big mistake. But we were so confident in our action when we did it, we thought it was the right thing. So these people who think they're doing right and really it's wrong, the reason it's so terrible is because they'll continue and strengthen their bad deeds. I mean, if you don't realize that there's anything wrong in front of you, when you fall, you realize it. No, you fall in the pit, you trip, and you fall on the log. I fell. That's, you know, you know you fell. Next time, you're careful in that area. But if you think it's the right way to go, and you're going down the wrong path, but you're sure it's the right way to go, you keep on going down that path because you don't even realize it's the wrong way to go. So this is even worse because you continue on in that direction, despite the fact that it's ra. It's not enough. They don't even see the truth. And they don't see the evil in front of their eyes. They even find proofs. And they can give us absolute proofs and tests, and they can trial and error, and they can tell us this is right. For their bad thoughts. So they'll say, "Hakozvos." And this is the worst evil that brings them totally to destruction. This is what it says in the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, that the heart of this nation has become fat. Oznav hachbeid, and their ears are heavy. Beinav hasha penyira beinav voznav yishmal vavo yavin v'shav v'rapvalo. You know, in their eyes, they are like covered, because they're not going to see with their eyes, or hear with their ears, or with their heart, and do tshuva, because they just don't see it, because they're totally mistaking everything around them for being good. Just all because they're in darkness, ukavushim tachas memshelas yitzram, and they're totally enslaved by the yitzhar hara. So olam hazeh does this for us, even during the daytime. The yitzhar hara overtakes us. We make mistakes. We don't realize what we're doing is going down the wrong path. We're doing the wrong things, and either we suddenly find ourselves in a hole which we weren't planning on being in, or we continue down the wrong path for a long period of time because we think it's the right path. Eventually you hit a wall and you say, this is the wrong way to go. But if you don't hit that wall, then you keep on going down the wrong path for decades. Those who have already left this prison, they see the truth and they can give us advice. So that he goes on to the next point he makes, which is not our discussion right now, that people who have been through these challenges and overcome, they're the ones who can guide us in doing the right things. He gives a famous mashal of, if you remember, like in a corn maze. So in a corn maze, sometimes there's like a big platform in the middle. So the one who's made it to the platform in the middle can look down and say, make a left, make a right, go straight, that's the wrong way, go back. So that's the mashal is for somebody who's been through the challenges and come out at the end successful. And they can, since they've been through it themselves, they can direct you where to go. So he talks about how the idea of going to a chacham or a tzaddik to guide us in how to act and how to improve our midos, that's the mashal with the guy in the middle of the corn maze. That's a separate point. But what we're taking for our discussion is that we see what darkness does to us. Darkness as a mashal, darkness physically makes us make two mistakes. We cannot see the pitfalls in front of us. We can mistake things that are wrong for right, or right for wrong, etc. And number two, and those that's it physically. And then spiritually, it's the same things. Spiritually, we sometimes just don't realize what we're getting ourselves into until we fall. And sometimes we start boosting up, improving inappropriate ideas, wrong plans, wrong actions, and suddenly look back and we're way down the wrong road because we've been mistaking the wrong thing all this time for what was right. So that's the darkness of Olam Hazeh. So when it comes to Olam Hazeh is a world which confuses us. If Hashem was 100% clear, and the Torah was 100% clear in our minds, we wouldn't make these mistakes. Because we'd have clarity, we'd have light. Hashem would be shining down upon us. We'd be able to know exactly what's right and what's wrong, what's the way to go, what's not the way to go. But because this world conceals Hashem, we've mentioned many times before, I think, how the word Olam and Helam are related. Olam is the world, Helam is something which is concealed. Because the Olam gives us Helam. The world gives us concealment. Hashem is concealed in this world. It's a world of darkness. And we make these mistakes. The world, we have illusion. This world deceives us at times, and we think what's real is not real. We think what's not real is real. We end up falling and making mistakes a lot of the time. So that's the idea of darkness. Now, there's a pasuk that tells us, Ki shemesh u'magin Hashem, that Hashem is compared to the sun. Hashem is our sun and our shield. It's pasuk in Tehillim. Because the clarity comes from our connection to Hashem. The more one connects with Hashem, the more clarity we have in life. We know the famous pasuk, Ki ner mitzvah v'torah or, that mitzvah is a candle, and Torah is light. If you want to somehow light up the darkness of this world, the way to do that is to connect to Hashem, who is the sun, connect to the Torah, which is the light, and that's the way to overcome the darkness. The same capital in Tehillim, which we say on Rosh Chodesh, Baruch Nafshi, which we quoted before, it says, Tizrach Hashem Mashiach Seifun. Now when the sun shines, everyone is gathered in. And the Gemara says, that refers to Tzadikim and Olam Haba, that everyone gets gathered in, to know all the Rishayim get taken to Gehenna, and Tzadikim get put into their special place of reward in Olam Haba. That's when the sun shines. When you get into a world of clarity, it's very clear what's right and what's wrong, who's a Tzadik, who's a Rasha, what's the way to go in life, what was the right decision to make? What was the wrong decision to make? Why did this event happen? That's a clarity which we get in Olam Haba. But in this world, we don't have that clarity. So now we're in Kislev. Now, Kislev is a month which stresses the darkness of Olam Hazeh. It's a month where we're in the most dark of the year. The days are getting shorter and shorter, darker and darker. It's a time we have to grapple with spiritual darkness as well. This is the month we're supposed to think about in our lives, how much spiritual darkness do we endure? How much do we have in ourselves? How much clarity do we have? How can we give ourselves light of the Torah to fight this darkness? That's a big message of Kislev. This month is supposed to help us define darkness. The first thing is to define what's the darkness. When Mr. Sharam told us, it's not always so clear what things are. We have to define our darkness, and then we have to illuminate our lives. We have to bring light into our lives. The light comes, we'll talk about more at length, the Torah or. The Torah is our light. Hashem is our Shemesh. Hashem is our sun. The Torah is our light. And mitzvahs are our ner, mitzvahs are our candle. And these are things in life that help us clarify and define right and wrong, emes and sheker, what's an illusion and what's reality. That's what these things do for us. So the main avoda, this is the broad picture of Chodesh Kislev, the main avoda of Chodesh Kislev is going to be understanding darkness and light and working on trying to identify that darkness and illuminating our lives. So that's the first point. And this is the broader, we'll get to much more specifics. That's the broader picture of Chodesh Kislev. But you see that physically, because the world is getting darker and darker until you hit the solstice. Suddenly things are getting lighter again. And then it lasts for a while until you get to the equinox, that the world is still longer nights and shorter days, but yet it's getting, the days are starting to get slowly longer and longer and longer until Chodesh Nisan. Nisan's when things start evening out again, which we have Pesach and the miracles of Pesach and the clarity of Pesach. The name Kislev. So Kislev itself, we mentioned how all the names really came from Bavel. That was one of our earlier introductory classes. But yet Chazal deemed these names to be the names of our months, which means that the name of a month is significant. We learned from Rav Tzadok how the names of the months remind us of the concept of the month. So what's the concept of Kislev? So the name Kislev, you could break up into two parts. Kes, Lev. You have Kaf Samech, and Lamed Vav. So the word Kes is covering, something covered. Kisui is a cover. A pak cover is a kisui. And Lechasos is to cover something. And then Lamed Vav is the number 36. Right? Gematria 36. Kislev. It's the 36 are covered. So what's the 36 that are covered? And a lot of what we're just discussing now will be coming from the Bnei Yisachar. That's the sefer we discussed before, who's very focused on the meaning of the months. So the number one is very interesting. It's pointed out by many that the terms used in the Torah for light, candle, or they're 36 times used in the Torah. So if you count, take your Chumash and count how many times you see words referring to light, it'll be 36 times total in the Chumash. It's very interesting. So because this month is a month where the light is hidden. Kislev, the light is hidden. So if you look in your look for the words ner, or, maor, maoros, if you do a count in your chumash, you'll get 36 of them. Because 36 is the number of light. That's number one. So the name of the month itself, Kislev, the light is covered up. That's what the name of the month means. So, which is clearly, it means the avoda of the month is revealing hidden light. Now what's this light we're talking about? What light are we trying to reveal? So we mentioned the idea of Torah or. But there's a few deeper concepts here. So number one is that I'll read to you a quote from Bereishis Rabbah. It's over here. Bereishis Rabbah. Now, we've probably heard of the concept before of the Or HaGanuz, the hidden light. And Rashi talks about it in Bereishis. That Hashem created the world, and Hashem made an initial light, Vayomer Elokim Yehi Or, on the first day of creation. That's not the light of the sun. The sun was created on the fourth day. So there was something called Or, before there was the sun, before there were stars, there was something called light in the world. And scientifically, there's no explanation of it. We don't know what that means exactly. So Chazal tell us there was some special light Hashem made. And when Hashem saw that the world will have Rishayim, Hashem hid that light away. And the light was hidden away for Tzadikim. I'll talk about who gets to use that light. But that light was hidden away. But the world was created with some special light. Again, it's not sunlight. It's not moonlight. It's not light coming from stars. What it is something called Or HaGanuz. It's the hidden light, light from Hashem. And that's a special light. Now, how long did that light actually shine for before it was hidden away? That's our first question. So you can probably guess already what number we're talking about here. Anyone who's following along, number 36. But the Medrash says, Amar Yehuda Bar Simon, Osa Ora Shenivra Ba Olam Adorishon Amar Vihibe Bavsof Olam Atzofo. The world that was used to create the world, Adorishon was able to use that light and see from one end of the world to the other. So it was very illuminating. You know, it was very, very clear. Through that light, you can see everything, you can understand the whole world. When Hashem saw that in the future, there are going to be generations of people who do terrible averus, Avodah Zarah, Dor HaMabul, Dor HaFlaga, which came and they destroyed the world. So Hashem took that light and hid it away from them. He didn't want Rashayim to be able to utilize that light. And that's the pasuk of Iyuv Yimna Mirashayim Oram, it says. Hashem held back from the Rashayim their light. So why did Hashem hide it? It was hidden away for tzaddikim in the future. As it says, because it says in Bereishis, Hashem saw the light that it was good. And good refers to tzaddikim, as it says, Imru tzaddik kitov. A tzaddik should say that things are good. And skipping down, then they say, Amar Rav Levi b'shem Rav Nazira Amar. So Rav Levi said in the name of Rabbi Nazira, Shloshim v'sheish shaos shimsha osa ora. This light, it existed for 36 hours. 36, same number, Kislev, 36 hours. What were the 36 hours? So it says that Adam was able to use it on Erev Shabbos. Adam sinned, and Hashem wanted to take the light away. But Hashem said, let's leave it for Shabbos. So the light was there for 12 hours Erev Shabbos. It was there for 24 hours of Shabbos. Then Hashem hid it away for the future. That's what the Medrash says. So Adam got to use that light for Erev Shabbos and Shabbos, and then he lost it. That was this light. So this light was used by Adam for 36 hours. So back to Kislev, 36 are covers. We see this number again, 36, refers to this hidden light. And again, this number, the idea of light as well comes up. So the words for light in the Torah are used 36 times. The hidden light of Hashem was hidden away for Tzaddikim was out for 36 hours. And there's more. You know, there's a lot of examples of this. How many Chanukah candles do we light? Excluding the Shamash. We light 36. 36, right? 36 Chanukah candles. In the Gemara, there's 36 Masechtos. 36 Masechtos. Ki Torah Or. Torah is light. So in Mishnayos, there's more. But in the Gemara, there's 36 Masechtos that we learn. 36. So this idea of 36, it always corresponds to the idea of light, of Torah, of this Or HaGanuz, this hidden light. I saw two more references. This is actually a new book I got. It came out last year. It's called Jewish Wisdom in the Numbers. It's an art scroll book. It's very fascinating. But it goes through really a lot of numbers. You know, it goes through many, many numbers and tells you different sources about numbers, what they mean. Like we talked about a few weeks ago about the number 12 and 13. I'm sure he talks about it in here. I actually ordered this. It just arrived today, so I was excited to see it. But here he has two more examples of where you find 36. The Luchos, Chazal tell us, their dimensions were 6 by 6 tefachim. So they were 36 square tefachim, the Luchos. So that's another place. The Luchos were Torah, 36 square tefachim. And then Moshe Rabbeinu gave his final speech to Klal Yisrael for 36 days. He started Rosh Chodesh Shvat. He died on Zayin Adar. That was 36 days. So his final speech to Klal Yisrael was 36 days. So two more references for the number 36. So we see here this incredible thing. The number 36, which is Kislev. Kislev is the month where 36 is covered. That number refers to light, Torah, or Aganuz. And the number has so many different references to the same concept, which we're in a month where things are very much hidden from us. We're in a month of confusion, where we're not privy to the light of the Torah. We're not privy to the light of the Or HaGanuz, and we're trying to make clarity out of darkness in this month. That's what we're trying to do. So the physical dark of this month, it's approaching the physical enlightening, let's call it. You know, we're getting to the solstice, where things are going to start getting lighter and lighter and lighter. So too, in the spiritual darks of the month, so our job in this month is to try to lead ourselves to the spiritual light. That's our job. The next month, we'll talk about more at length, you know, next month, but it's Teves. It's very interesting. The Teves, Tes Ves Saf, so the root of that word is the word Tov. And the first time you find the word Tov in the Torah is V'yara Elokim Es HaOr Ki Tov. Hashem saw the light, that it was Tov, that it was good. Because Kislev, which is where you have the light covered, leads to a month where we're trying to experience that light even more. We're supposed to lead ourselves to more clarity. The very first Tov in the Torah is mentioned when it comes to light. Chazal refer to the light of the day as Ki Tov. We find that in the Gemara a couple of times, that the light of the day is called the goodness. That's what the light is called. And the month of Teves is a month which, you know, those are tragic months we'll talk about later on, but it's a month where the name itself lends itself to reference to light. That's because Chanukah, Kislev, is a month of darkness being covered, and Teves is a month where we start experiencing that light once again. That's the month of Teves. Interestingly enough, you know, the mitzvah of the menorah, when we light the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, forget Chanukah for a second, in the Beis HaMikdash, so the main mitzvah is not the lighting. It's interesting. The main mitzvah of the menorah is called Hatavas HaNeros. It's preparing the Neros. So the Kohen would go in, and he would take out the old wicks, and he would clean out the cup and put in more oil. People don't realize this, that you don't need a Kohen to light them, technically. The Hadlakas Kasher Bazaar, non-Kohen's allowed to light the menorah, that's not the main avoda. The main avoda done is the preparing of the candles. That you need a Kohen for. But a non-Kohen can light the menorah, and it's still kosher. So what does it mean to us? So I'm just looking at the language used, as Behetivo, the Torah says, Hatov Asaneros, the word Tov again. Right? Because preparing Neros is called Tov. Preparing the light is called Tov. The preparation of the candles is looked at as an idea of Tov, extending the light out. What you're doing is you're preparing the candles so they can extend light. And that's the idea of Teves, is a month where we're able to extend that light and be part of that light. We passed out a few weeks ago the chart of different letters for each month, which some of you might still have. I have some more here we can look at a different time. The letter of the month of Kislev is the letter Samech. The letter of the month of Teves, the letter Ayin. So I was thinking about, like, how could those things relate to this concept? The word samich refers to somich, is to lean upon something. So you picture somebody who's blind. So they have to walk around leaning on something so they can figure out where they're going. If you're walking around in the dark, so you're going to be feeling around like someone who's blind trying to figure out where to go. So that's samich. Samich is the letter of somich, of having to lean upon something. So you have to be able to have your support because you're in the darkness. The letter of Tevis is the letter ayin. Ayin is the eye. Because Tevis leads us to a month where we can be able to see better. Because we've gotten out of the darkness of Kislev into the clarity, what we would call Tevis. So Tevis leads us, is a month that we should end up in the eyesight, whereas Kislev is a month where we're in the darkness. It's also fascinating, these 2 months actually connect, not just because they're back-to-back, because Chanukah actually overlaps both months. The only holiday we have that overlaps 2 months is Chanukah. And Chanukah overlaps Kislev and Tevis, because these 2 months are kind of bonded together in that way. So we're in a month of darkness, and we're trying to move into a month of light. So that's going to be our theme right now for Kislev is we're going to try to figure out more about the darkness of Kislev, and then we'll discuss more about the light of what's to come. So that's our intro to Kislev. So one other piece we'll read before we get more into the idea of darkness. This is a quote from, I actually meant to copy, so I forgot to copy it, so no one gets a handout of this one, but I'll read it. This is a sefer called Yosher Divrei Emes. This is a Chassidish sefer. This was one of the, it was written by one of the big Chassidish Rebbes. I forgot which Chassidus he was. But it's a famous classic Chassidish sefer. And he writes in here, he quotes from somebody named, I don't know who this is, he quotes from somebody named Rav Gershon Lutzker, who was a Talmud of the Maggid of Mezrich. So he's a famous name. He was one of the Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov, Maggid of Mezrich, who spread around Chassidus to the world. So he quoted, and he said the following, about the Or HaGanus. Ra'ach Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem saw the light that wasn't, like we said before, Hashem saw the special light, which wasn't, the Rishayim weren't worthy of using, and Hashem hid it away for Tzadikim. V'hikshei Chengazun, so the question is, where did Hashem hide this light? Where is the light now? Hashem hid it away somewhere. Where did it go? So we'll talk about it more. He mentions a little bit over here. But he says, V'nei katzer dvarav kushos, I'm going to paraphrase his words and shorten it. But Chazal tell us a fascinating thing. This is in Medrash Tanchuma, in Parshas Noah. Chazal tell us, Shetori or Gadol, the Torah is the great light. Michila haya or nigle. Initially, this light was exposed, and everybody could see it. Meaning Adam was the one around, but anyone can see it. V'charkach ganzo kosh baruch hu. And then Hashem hid away this light into the Torah itself. So initially, whatever this means to us, the Torah was something which was just readily available. You know, the light of the Or HaGanus was something, it means the clarity of understanding the life in the world. Understand the Torah means you understand life, you understand the world. The Or HaGanus, before it was Ganus, before it was hidden away, was out in the open. And that means the Adam, we said before, could see the entire world through this light. Meaning he had understanding of everything through this light because it was a clarity of Torah knowledge which he was privy to before Hashem hid it away. But when Hashem hid it away, he put it into the Torah. Now why did Hashem do that? Gunzo ve'limosh eno nigla or latipshim l'anashim bilti shlemim. Hashem hid it away so that this light would not be exposed to people who are fools or imperfect. Him enam masigim nelam, because they would not understand it. So Hashem understood that people who are going to be created that aren't quite worthy of this light, they're going to misunderstand it, they're foolish, and therefore Hashem hid it in the Torah, and it's locked in. And now only if you put forth the effort to study Torah are you going to be able to access that light. Aval tzadikim hacharedim l'dvaro, tzadikim, who tremble at Hashem's word, v'darshei Hashem v'chokrim asokim amonim, and they seek out Hashem, and they search out Torah like its precious gems, aval asir lavo le'em ma'or, they're the ones who are going to experience this light, v'zeo gunzo tzadikim asir lavo. This is what it means, the light is hidden away for tzadikim in the future. The tzaddikim who learned Torah, they're going to be exposed to this light which was hidden away. So he explains to us the hidden light is something which we could access. With focus and diligent Torah study, one's able to access a little bit of this light. Because this light is really the clarity of the Torah is supposed to give us. So originally it was out in the open. Adam could just open his eyes and he can understand the whole world. Hashem hid that away and the understanding was taken away from Adam. But yet, for tzaddikim who learn Torah, they're able to pull out this light once again. So this darkness, Kislev, the darkness of the 36, the concealment of the 36, conceals the Or HaGanus. So the antidote to that is going to be understanding Torah. That's the antidote. Because that's the way that you're able to uncover the 36. You can uncover the Or HaGanus through Torah study. And that's what he's explaining to us. And that's really going to end up being the larger theme of understanding Kislev. Now, to discuss darkness and I want to discuss more about darkness and light in a larger sense. The idea of darkness and light, we already discussed in a physical sense what it means. And we're unaware of the world around us. We can't see reality. You know, whether our vision's obscured or the reality's obscured, we just can't figure out what's around us. You know, when you're fumbling around a dark room, you're very confused. You turn on the lights, and then there's reality. Let's just take the example. If we turn off the lights in here, we'd all fumble around trying to get where we need to go. You turn on the light, you say, oh, wow, now I can see everything, because everything's so clear. So the darkness of the world is really that. But we know things always progress from darkness to light. Vayera vayi vilker. It was dark, and then it was light. The Jewish day goes night to day. It's pointed out the word erev, evening, comes to the word taruvus, a mixture. Things are confusing. It's mixed. Things are very confused. Bokir comes to the word bikur. Bikur means to analyze something. When they used to check karbanos to see if they're a kosher, they would do a bikur on the karbanos. They would be able to analyze the karbanos because it's clarity. Bikur means clarity. So vayir vaybokir is night to day, also means confusion to clarity. And that's the process of Jewish life. So this darkness of the world is going to conceal Hashem from us. That's the darkness of the world. The world is a place of concealment. So the question is, now what is the darkness? What is this darkness? We're talking about a lot about darkness. What is the darkness exactly of this world? What is it that conceals Hashem? So this introduces to us the ideas, really the ideas of Hanukkah come very much into this concept. Hanukkah obviously is the holiday of light. And we're fighting against Yavan, which is compared to darkness, as we'll discuss. And we'll see how those ideas really impact the entire month of Kislev. Let's introduce the concept. You know, Chazal tell us there's four Malchios. There's four ancient kingdoms which, you know, fought against Klal Yisrael, and for a while were world powers till they fell. And you're familiar with these ideas. You have Babel, you have Paras and Madai go together, you have Yavan, and you have Edom. So you're talking about Babylonia, Persia, Greece, and Rome. Those are four ancient empires. They were world powers. You know, they you know, historically, you see it in Tanakh, you see it in history books as well. These were the world powers of the time. These are powers that came to destroy Klal Yisrael. Babel destroyed the first base of Mikdash. Persia was the Purim story. Yavan's Hanukkah. And then Edom is the nation which destroyed the second base of Mikdash. And we're still suffering from that gullus this very day. Those are the four Malchios. Yishmael, the Arabs are not mentioned in that list. They have their own special place in Jewish thought, the Arabs. But in the classic list, you have those four kingdoms. So those four kingdoms are different ideas of people that came to destroy Klal Yisrael. Now, we don't view these four kingdoms just as historical battles. I mean, it's true. Historically, there was battles. Historically, you know, there were wars, and we were fought, and there was destruction. But we view these not just as battles against a world empire. We view these as, you know, epic clashes of different ideologies. That's how we view it. I guess the Maharal is famous. He speaks about it at length, all four ideologies we're talking about over here. But Babel was an ideology, and Persia's ideology, and Yavan, Greece's ideology, and Rome's ideology. And all those ideologies stand up against Klal Yisrael, and we're forced to grapple with them, fight back, and figure out, you know, how do we deal with that ideology. That's really when we have Purim and Hanukkah. We're grappling with the ideas of Persia and Greece. We don't have a holiday to grapple with Babel's ideas, and we're waiting for the holiday to grapple with Rome's ideas. We haven't destroyed Rome quite yet. We're still suffering from Rome's gullus. Those are the four different Malchios. Now, in the very beginning of the Torah, second pasuk in the Torah, it compares the four Malchios are actually alluded to right there. I'll read the pasuk to you. It's a very often quoted medrash, but it's pasuk bey is in Bereshit. It's the very second pasuk in the whole Torah. Varsa silva vahu, the land was empty, choshech apnei sahom, and there was darkness on the face of the abyss. Ruach Elokim rechefes al pnei amayim, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. Very, very strange, possibly a little mysterious what it means. So Chazal tell us that the terms here refer to the four Malchios. Meaning even from Bereshis, these different ideologies were already in place as challenges to Klal Yisrael. It says that Sohu refers to Babel, and Vohu refers to Persia, and Choshech refers to Yavan. Yavan's referred to by the word darkness. Al Pnei Sahom, and the abyss refers to Rome, to Edom. But we already see Yavan, Chazal tell us, is associated with the idea of Choshech, of darkness, as we see about Yavan. So it's very appropriate that in this month of darkness, of Kislev, where the world is dark and everything is concealed, The ideology we grapple with is one referred to by Chazal as an ideology of darkness. Now, we have to figure out, what is it about Yavan that's dark? Why is that the way? If you think of it historically, Greek culture is looked at as one of the highest cultures in history. A lot of what we have today stems from Greek culture, the beauty of their architecture, their accomplishments in science, and art, and music, and all sorts of mathematics all come from Greek culture. And much of the modern world really is based on ancient Greek culture from that time of history. So Chazal referring to that as darkness, and the modern American mind says, what do you mean that's darkness? That was an enlightening time in history. That was an enlightenment. That's where we achieved so much, and so much of the modern world is built upon that. So why is that darkness? But in Kislev, in the month of the darkness, the nemesis is going to be Yavan, because they're the people of darkness. It all goes together. The question is why. So we have to understand, you know, what does Yavan stand for? And I don't know if we'll do it all today or some next week as well. What does the Greek Empire stand for? Why is that referred to as darkness? And why is Kislev the time we fight back against that ideology and bring light? So the first and foremost, historically, the Greek Empire was spread by Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great, he's a very, very larger-than-life historical figure. And he's somebody who actually was a student of Aristotle to a certain point. He was somebody very much involved with Greek philosophy. And he's the one who spread the ideals of the Greek Empire to the world. One time I was speaking about this elsewhere, and somebody corrected me and said that the empires just fought against the time of Hanukkah wasn't really Greek. They were the Assyrians. And the truth is, yeah, they're coming from the land of Assyria, but it was all the Greek culture. They were the Assyrian Greeks, because the Greek culture had spread. There were two Greek empires. There was a Greek empire associated with in the south with Egypt, and then there was a Greek empire in the north with Assyria, and to the west, and everywhere else. But it was all the Greek culture spread by Alexander the Great. It was all that same culture. So Chazal referred to it as Yavan, because it's all the culture of Yavan, and all the ideology of Yavan that was spread around the world. Alexander the Great really overtook the world, and he spread this ideology from Greece to the entire ancient world at that point. Not the Far East, but the Middle East and Europe was totally overtaken by Greek culture. Greek culture represents to us the idea, it's the beginnings of science, modern science, philosophy, and how we view that in terms of Jewish thought is the following way. And this is a major turning point historically for Jews and for the world. Until that point in history, the world was a very religious place. Everything was about the gods. People talk about the gods, the idolaters, and we lived in a Kodesh Baruch Hu, obviously. But everything was attributed to God. Everything was supernatural, because science allows you to give human explanations to what's happening around you. If you don't have science, so then everything is about what God did, because we don't have any way to explain it. Even nowadays, science can't explain everything. So at that point, you're forced to say, this is where God has to come in, because we can't explain it scientifically. But scientifically, science explains things in human terms based on the world around us. And science, by definition, has to exclude God from its explanations, because once you say it's supernatural, it's not scientific anymore. And don't get me wrong, scientists certainly can believe in God, and many scientists do believe in God. But it's not scientific to include God in a equation or something. It doesn't make sense, because equations have to be equations. They can't say, it doesn't make sense scientifically, but God did it, so it's scientific now. That doesn't work. That's not scientific. But Greek society introduced to us the idea of science. The scientific method, the way that we understand the world around us, really began during that time period based on Greek culture. Philosophy, we know the ancient Greek philosophers, the famous philosophers of history. Philosophy means I'm going to explain what happens in the world based on the human mind. Philosophers can't just say it's a chok. They can't just say it's supernatural. They can't just say it's miraculous. They have to give a human explanation as to why things are happening. That's what a philosopher does. Again, a philosopher can also believe in God too, but to say a philosophical rationale on something, you can't blame it on God. You have to say something which is logical in human terms. So what happened at that time in history was that things started moving away from godly explanations, from the supernatural, and things started moving into more of natural explanations. Everything had to be scientific or philosophical. It was about human achievement. The world moved from being more God-centric to human-centric. Now, it probably took another 1,500 years till people became really secular, but the ideology of the Greek world made things that we can explain everything in human terms, and we don't need to explain things in supernatural terms anymore. Even there, the Greek idols were very, very human. When I was in school, they made me read one of those, I forgot which book, but one of the books with Homer, and you read about, they're like people, just happen to be like strong, but there was nothing godly about them, per se. because the Greek mind had to put everything into human terms. You couldn't have anything which is beyond us, anything which is supernatural. So even something which was a god was basically one of us, just a little bit stronger. That's what their gods were like. You know, and they had the same challenges and struggles we humans. They had Yitzhahara, listen, their gods too. You know, they also had their problems. So that's the world. That took over the world. That was a changing point in human history. In Jewish history, there's also a major changing point, because that was the transition between the world of Tanakh to the world of basically where the Mishnah and Torah Shebaal Peh were written down. You know, Tanakh ends with the rebuilding of the second Beis Hamikdash. Yovan overtakes the world like right after that. So until the end of Tanakh, we had Nevuah. Once Yovan came on the scene, Nevuah ended. Meaning, just like in the non-Jewish world, things became more focused on the human, not on God. So the Jewish world as well, you know, we stopped, the communication with Hashem ended. And Chazal tell us that at the times of the second Beis Hamikdash, Nevuah was over. The last prophet was Malachi, and he was part of the building of the second Beis Hamikdash, and that was it. There's even a medrash that actually connects the conquest of Alexander the Great to the end of Nevuah. Two things are actually connected to each other. Because that's the point of the whole world transition from being a world that was a world focused on the supernatural to a world that did its best to keep things natural. So even in Jewish life, we lost Nevuah at that point. And at that point, we focused much more on Torah Shebaal Peh, which is the human input in the Torah, basically. You know, the rabbis debating ideas and coming out with a psak and recording opinions in Mishnayos. That was done really after the advent of Yavan and this time history. So it was a major transitional point in history. It's understanding the world without resorting to God in the secular world. In the Jewish world, we lost Nevuah. That was the two things going together. Science means we analyze what we see around us and determine how it works from our perspective. Science is coming from the human perspective. We're not going to look at the divine. We're not going to see the divine blueprints of what's there. So we already see this is a world of darkness. Because once you're going to close God out of the picture, so now it's all up to us. Now, when the light's on, I don't need to come up with philosophy. I can see what's in front of me. When the lights are off, so then I fumble around the room, and I have to feel, what is this thing? It's soft, it's tall, maybe it's a chair, maybe it's... you got to figure out what it is, because the lights are off. At that point in history, the lights kind of went off. Because when the Nevuah is over, and the world's not focused on the human mind, on God anymore, so it became a very, very dark world. And we analyze things, you know, with our limited brains from our perspective, and we don't come on to any sort of divine explanations anymore. That's what the Greeks did to the world. That's the way, not just for themselves, that's what they spread to the entire planet at that point. That's how the way you view life is not based on God. View life based on yourself. You know, let's just take like a mushroom for instance. Let's say there's a building. You know, you see an unmarked, newly built building. And you walk into it. So you have no clue what it's here for. So you walk into one room, and you know, you're looking, you know, it could be an office, maybe it's a bedroom, I don't know, like I'm not really sure. Maybe they're going to put a furnace in here. Like, you go into the other room, you're guessing. You know, you could be right, you could be wrong. You know, we're smart, we're experienced, we can figure it out. But it's not so clear sometimes. That's, you know, you're guessing, because you're looking for your perspective. You don't have the blueprint. You don't have the architect's, you know, guide to understand this building. But yet, if you're able to get the blueprints, so you're able to tell, oh, what is this for? You look at the architect's diagram he actually sketched out on there. Okay, that's going to be an office. That's a bedroom, that's a bathroom, that's a living room, they can figure it out. So until that point, you're guessing. It's intelligent guessing. You know, you're basing it on life experience, you're basing it on size of the room and location of the room. So, and the guesses could be right. But is it for sure? Not for sure. That's like fumbling around in the dark. You know, if you're good enough, people Lolenu who are blind do a very good job figuring out what's in front of them. You know, they're so experienced, they can feel and figure things out. But they're not always right. They're usually right, not always right, because they're in darkness. When you're privy to the blueprints, or you put it to the diagram, or you turn on the lights, so at that point, things are very, very clear. So the world of science being the focus and the end-all, that puts us in the dark. Again, we'll talk more, science is valuable, you have to put it in the right context, but when the whole world is just about what do I see based on my own perspective, I'm missing out, because I'm not getting the true explanation of the world, I'm getting my conjecture, my guess, my hypothesis. I might be right, might be wrong, I don't know, and it's very hard to know these things. So science is correct on its level, but it doesn't give you a deeper level. I'm going beyond that. Science can only tell you the whats. It can't tell you the whys. So it can tell you that, you know, this thing in front of me is a table. But there's nothing scientific. Why is the table here? It's not scientific. That's already, you're getting into philosophy at that point, and then you're getting, you have to figure out the whys. And why is there a table here? Science can tell you how a human body works, but it can't tell you what the human purpose is. It can't tell you what you're doing on this planet. Science can't detect an neshama, because neshama is not physical, it's not scientific. So science is only giving you part of the picture. You can never have, science is never going to be able to tell you Tov and Ra. That's not scientific either. Science can tell you facts. It can't tell you moral. There's no morality is not scientific either. Ethics aren't scientific. So science will give you a good picture of fact in front of you. It gives you one of the whats, but it can't give you the whys. It only has certain tools. Science can't detect things that are not physical. Science cannot detect the malach, and science can't detect the neshama. So science will tell you, you talk about a soul. I never found one. I know I did all sorts of tests, and I looked at microscopes, and I did all sorts of things, and I couldn't find a neshama anywhere. And the answer is, of course not, because it's not scientific, a neshama, because it's not physical. Science can only tell you physical things in the world, can't tell you things that are spiritual. You know, science can't tell you is something just. It can't tell you something fair. That's not scientific either. These things are conceptual. So, science, and even philosophy, you know, we know that is there absolute morality? So the Torah is absolute morality. The Torah tells you absolutes, right and wrong. You look at the world out there nowadays, people are always trying to figure out what's moral, what's not moral. And every single year, something else that used to be very immoral, suddenly moral. You know, that happens. And you go back year by year by year by year, and everything that used to be totally off limits and disgusting and immoral suddenly is totally fine and moral. The Torah doesn't change. The Torah tells you there's absolutes in morality. Because it gets not scientific in the world, so everyone's trying to figure it out on their own. So that you can put more into the world of philosophy, but that's coming from the human mind, so there's nothing which is definitive about that. So it's darkness, totally darkness. Maybe you know there's a famous, I don't know, joke or story about the lights are off, and there's four people in a room, and they're feeling around in the room. So they're trying to figure out what's in front of them. So one of them says, I think it's a hose. I'm beginning, the example's wrong. And one says, it feels like a blanket to me. And one says, you know, I think it's like a wet towel. And one says, no, I think there's a rock over here. And they're all arguing what's in front of the room. So turn on the light, and it's turning from an elephant. So one had the tail, and one had the tusk, and one touched the nose, and one touched the fur. So they all had different ways of looking at the elephant. But when you're in the dark, so you're guessing, and you know, it's a good guess, and you're doing your best. But ultimately, are you seeing reality? Or are you seeing either it could be an obscure view of reality, it could be dead wrong, or it could be right, but still lacking information. You know, it's one of those three things. But that's the world of darkness that Yovan presented to the world. So we say Olam Hazeh is a world of Choshech, which we started with. It's because, you know, the world conceals the emes. It conceals the truth. Tashis Choshech V'Laila is Olam Hazeh, we said. When darkness comes down, Olam Hazeh is nighttime. But Olam Hazeh is a world of Teva. It's a world of nature, a world of science. Again, Hashem is not scientific either, so you're not going to find Hashem in a test tube. The scientists have this thing they call the God particle or something. I'm not sure what that means exactly, but you're not finding God in a particle either, you know, because God's not scientific. What you're finding scientifically is what you see in front of us, based on your own personal analysis and methods you use. But it's dark. You know, Yovan is choshech, as Chazal tell us. You know, it gives us partial truth. It gives us information which is valuable, but only put in the right context. When the light is on, if we're privy to turning on that light, if we're zocheh turning on that light, so then everything fits into place. We see the elephants in the room, so now it's good to know there's a tusk and there's a tail and there's fur and everything else. But we don't know it's an elephant, you're totally off. You're just making a big mistake. And as science is something which is very valuable under the context of the fact that there's a God in the world, and God put nature into place and created the laws of science, and science is a way in which we can perceive Hashem. Science is a way in which we can do incredible things and create technology and cure diseases and do amazing things with it. But yet, it could be a concealment. If you don't connect it, that it's a system put into place by Hashem, it's able to conceal Hashem and give us only a partial truth. So Kislev, we're in that darkness right now. And it's the time when Yovan rises up in Kislev because it fits them. In the month of darkness, this nation which gives the world a cloak of darkness and makes us focus on the darkness of the world, this nation is called Choshech al Pnei Sum. This is the nation of darkness on the face of the abyss. You know, it's the darkness of the world. Anyone who's seen Rabbi Akiva Tatz has a book called World Mask. And he talks about, it's a fascinating book if you haven't seen it, it's one of his older books. But he talks about at length, literally, the world mask. There's a mask over the world. And that mask is the mask of nature. And that mask is one way of understanding truth, and it's true, and we can understand that and understand Hashem through that mask. We have to know it's only a mask. We have to know that the laws of science and nature are being caused from a deeper source. There's something deeper behind it, making it work. It's there, not just, it's not the truth in and of itself, it's only one layer. And even if they discover, if the scientists could figure out everything in the world, which they can't and they haven't and they won't, but if they could, that'll still only be one layer. They're still never going to understand anything about Olam Haba. They'll never understand anything about Gan Eden. They'll never understand anything about how things work in Shemayim. And they'll never understand a Malach, because science can only get to that first layer. They can only get to the outer layer, the mask over the world, but they'll never be able to dig beneath that mask. That's not anything science. It's not scientific anymore. So it'll give you that partial picture, but that partial picture is confusing. Like we said before, Mrs. Sharm says, you might think that a pillar is a person. A person is a pillar. If you think this picture is it, so then you know, we've missed out on a lot of it. So I think we'll stop here for today. So next week we'll try to talk more about the light part of it now. That's all the darkness. Yeah.
So the concept of the Or HaGadlus within the Shabbos look,
yeah,
is that, can that be understood as spiritual clarity?
I think so, for sure. Yeah. I think so, for sure. Maybe we'll talk about that next week a little more. We'll talk about the light. We'll talk more about that as well. It's a good point to bring up.